You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The following podcast contains spoilers. We strongly recommend you watch the episode of The Americans we're discussing before listening to the podcast. New episodes air Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on FX.
Acting is finding truth in whatever world you're in. So it doesn't matter if you're fighting dinosaurs or you're in the 80s in the Soviet Union playing spies. The truth is in the material. And if you trust it, like I do, it's quite easy.
Hello and welcome to Slate's TV Club Insider Podcast for Season 4 of The Americans. I'm June Thomas, a writer and editor at Slate, and I'm the host of the podcast in which we take you behind the scenes and share some of the secrets in the making of the show. I've returned once again to glorious Gowanus, Brooklyn, where the show is made, to discuss Episode 4 of Season 4, which goes by the name of Chloramphenicol.
Whoa, did somebody tell you how to say that, or did you just do it?
I just know a lot about pharmaceuticals. Today, I'll be joined by the voice you just heard, Joe Weisberg, the creator of the show, his co-showrunner and co-executive producer, Joel Fields. Hello, Joel.
Hello.
And by Costa Ronan, who you may know as Oleg Igorovich Burov.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How are
Good
you?
Good to be here. Excellent. Thank you.
We got him here by threatening to play a tape of him turning evidence to the FBI.
But you did promise not to tell anyone.
So. Damn it.
Now, we want to talk with Costa, but we have to just address what just happened at the end of episode 4. That was extraordinarily traumatic, but very swift. How did you decide that it was Nina's time to go, you guys?
You know, this is one of those ones where since the time the character was introduced, season 1, people have been saying to us, tweeting us, emailing us, and asking us, is Nina going to get killed next episode? Is Nina going to get killed next episode? And so for basically 4 years at this point, we've been saying, no. And we really had no idea when it was going to happen. So really, this is just the time when the story finally came to its conclusion.
It's a funny thing. It's a while now that we've had this storyline pretty solidified. And Nina's story is one that actually didn't change radically as it unfolded. What did change is the when, and there were times when this happened at the end of season 3, in the middle of season 3, at the end of season 4, it kind of kept sliding around, and it really did just land here. In fact, I'd say up until the last minute, it was the first scene of episode 5 and the last scene of episode 4.
And also the how developed, because we read a book last summer that happened to tell the details of how people like this were actually executed at the time in the Soviet Union, which was something people didn't know until really after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Some of these secrets came out, and the details, which are essentially what you saw in the episode, which were designed to be humane. They actually didn't want people to know what was coming so they wouldn't be sitting there suffering. And so we tried to film that as accurately as possible. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so surprising and impactful. You haven't seen that before on screen, because that's not something anybody knew about.
Now, I will say, in fairness, very humane to the person who is being executed, because they don't have to sit there sweating the upcoming execution. It turns out they weren't so humane to the family, because there was simply no information given to the family. So eventually somebody would come up to visit their relative in jail, and they'd be told, they're not here, you should go down to the third floor. And then on the third floor, somebody would say, you need to go to records. And then you'd trudge down to records, and they would send you across the street, and then someone would just hand you a death certificate.
And the graves were unmarked too, so you couldn't visit the grave.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a little tough on the family. But good for the victim.
But the book Joe is referring to is called Farewell. It's written by Sergei Kostin, co-written by Sergei Kostin, who became one of our technical consultants and has been an enormous help on the show. and well worth reading.
You know, I was just listening to the guys and reliving that moment when I read about Nina's character, and I had to go back and reread it two or three times because I was just, obviously, from Oleg's point of view, Nina and Oleg have had such a huge, huge history together. You know, he was introduced via Nina and her relationship with Agent Beeman back in season two. So when I read that, that was a tremendous, tremendous shock and had a great effect on me.
Yeah. And your character, I mean, Oleg really, I think we realized by the end, really was in love with Nina.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have a sense, or as the actor playing Oleg, do you have a sense of what it was about Nina that was so bewitching? I mean, so many men on the show have been absolutely bewitched by her.
What attracted him in Nina? Her. You know, it wasn't just because they were put together in the same space. It was because they were part of the same world, but also living very, very similar lives and going through very similar tests. And something that brought them together was also the obstacles that they had on their paths.
Mm-hmm. And he really put himself at risk for her.
Absolutely. Yeah. He basically, went pretty much against himself and everything mm-hmm. he believed in
right.
to help her. And that was also very surprising for him because it's not something that he would have done on a whim. It's something that he would have lost a lot of sleep over.
Now, Jay's, having worked with Costa, does actually having the physical actor and getting to know him change what you do for the character?
Well, I'd say the character, on the one hand, has grown a lot since we've gotten to know you. And on the other hand, has followed a trajectory that we very much had in mind. So I think it was kind of a merging of both processes. And at some point, it becomes indistinguishable because you're writing to the character, but the character has fused with the actor. You're kind of engaged in like a jazz improv at that point as a writer.
You have to act in English and Russian.
Right.
Is it different? Do you feel like you're doing a different task in the two different tongues?
A great question. Different task, no. Different process, no. However, the process is quite different in itself because you think in a different language. You don't just go in and you say the lines because they're on a piece of paper. You to say those lines, you need to think to say that. Uh-huh. And thinking in Russian and thinking in English are two different tasks. That's why it's so different on other shows and other actors who play Russians, but they're not Russians because they're not thinking in the language. And you can see it straight away. They're thinking in English because the pattern is different.
Uh-huh. Mm.
So they arrive at a sentence that they don't really understand. Whereas thinking in a language that you speak is quite different in essence. So to deliver a dialogue in English, you have to think in English. And this is where the two tasks kind of separate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's fun because like this morning it was all about Russian scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're Russian and you act in Russian and you kind of tap into that side of you and the part of the common cultural DNA, it's fantastic, you know.
How does it just work? Do you get your scripts in Russian? You're never switching from one to the other within a piece of dialogue, right?
We did a few times, didn't we? Like the great polygraph test scene.
Right.
That was English, yeah. Russian, right. English, that's Russian, right. English, that's Russian.
Right. Yeah.
But that could have been probably the only one, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Nina and Anton have done it, but you not so much.
No. Wow, it feels like it's been ages ago.
So the script is in Russian. And you,
I'm sorry?
So the script is in Russian and you...
Well, the scripts are written in English. And then we've got a great team of translators who translated the dialogue into Russian. And then so when we get it, it's what was originally intended and written. And then what we see is also in Russian, which is the language is going to be delivered in. And it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting process because it's so imperative for the translator to capture not just the words, but the essence of what the writers are trying to say, the tone and the what's not being said.
Mm.
Because the show, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the show, it feels like it's so much about what's not being said
right,
than
right.
what's about being said. So it's kind of like you read between the lines, and when you read between the lines in a different language, that's a completely different task. But so it's imperative that translations are so spot on, not just in terms of the words, but in terms of the meaning of those words. Because otherwise it's a completely different show.
Yeah. Now, this may be an offensive question. I apologize if it is. But do you speak with your own accent, or do you give Oleg like a Russian accent?
I don't give him... I don't think there is such a thing as the Russian accent. There's a couple of things that come into play. There's an accent that we're used to hearing in films and television that has been perceived to be a Russian accent for 20 or 30 years, which is not Russian. And now, because our ear is accustomed to hearing that accent, we kind of expect a Russian to be speaking with that accent. So when a Russian is speaking with an accent like Annette, Lev, Vera, myself, mm-hmm. you're like, I read somewhere, somebody wrote that why couldn't these people find an actual Russian actor, because his accent isn't Russian. And I read that, and I'm like, I just was left speechless, because you know what? I mean, obviously that person knew better about Russian accent than I did.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a personal preference. So with character, he's definitely got a different pattern of speech to what I have. He's mm-hmm. got a different accent to what I have. He's got a lot of what he's got that I don't have, and the other way around. So he's a character in his own right mm-hmm. with a completely different, standalone, independent life.
Now, I'm just thinking, this is also the episode where we heard Elizabeth say, a vos vital part of training.
Yes.
Now, I hope she's not going to upset the Russians, by the way.
Well, it's okay. We told her to model that on Natasha. So, but that was a conscious statement on what Costa is saying.
Yes. Yeah. In the script, it actually said, a la Natasha and Bullwinkle.
Yeah. When your family left Russia or Soviet Union or whatever it was at the time, or the Russian Federation, did you ever think you'd be earning your living by speaking Russian?
I don't know. No. I didn't think that I'd be making my living speaking in any language. I've kind of I love theater, and that's something that I was doing at that time. When I left Russia, I was working on a radio station. So speaking and creating voices and creating characters and writing was something that I already was doing when I was making my living then in Russian without English, mm-hmm. even though kind of in a way it was combined. So no, I can't think, I don't think I was having those thoughts.
And can you take us back to... You were living in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you were watching the show or not, how you heard about the part, going in up to what you called the chemistry read. Maybe you can explain what that chemistry read was. What kind of was your knowledge of the show and how you found out about the part through getting the call that you got the part?
That was, that was a turbulent time. How I found out about the show was I saw a billboard. It was La Cienega in Santa Monica. I still remember driving down the hill on La Cienega, and I saw the board, and I was like, and it had Russian writing in it. I gotta know more about the show. And then I obviously started doing research, and I was blown away, because even though I didn't know much about the show, but I thought, what a great idea. And it first of all, it was something that hasn't been done before. It wasn't a story that was told before. It was a story that deserves to be told and should have been told years and years and years before. It had a phenomenal cast, of course, Carrie and Matthew and Noah. I mean, I didn't know much about the writers or creators or anything else, but the more I read about the show, the more snippets here and there that I saw, the more I was kind of engrossed with the show. And I remember speaking to my manager at that time. I was like, just get me a mock sides. I will put it on tape and I will send it to those guys, because I need to be on the show. How can I not be on the show? You know, the actor in me was confused with the audience member. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, why? You know, and all those eternal questions that actors around the world ask. And I was one of those actors. So it wasn't the right time. You know, as it happens, that was in the beginning, that was a board for season one. So I got the mock sides, but I didn't put it on tape. However, towards the end of season one, I was doing a lot of self-tapes. And one of the self-tapes, I remember my agent sent me an email and said, hey, there's the casting brief for this guy, Oleg, for the show The Americans. And I'm like, I know this show. Yes, this is the time. And like, I want to say that I didn't know that that was my time. I didn't know that I was going to get the part. But a little part of me was like, there's a reason to it, you know? And so I sent the tape in and you hope, but at the same time, you know, everybody's telling you, you just got to forget and let go and kind of, and so I kind of had to. It's nerve-wracking. What can I say? So, and then I got a call to go for a casting session at DreamWorks, and I get there, and that's when I met Dan. I show up in my suit and my tie and my white shirt, and I was like, English, Russian. I was like, Russian, English. And like, these guys don't even speak Russian, but nevertheless, I'm like, English, Russian. And I was drained, but I was feeling so elated. I was feeling so happy to be working on this fantastic material and for this great show. I didn't, this was it. Even if I didn't get that part, I felt so creatively fulfilled just working on that material and bringing that character to life. Because that's all we can do as actors. These guys have done all the work before us. All we can do is come in and breathe life into it. You know, let that character live. You don't need to try anything. Just let
I love you saying that as if it's nothing. All we have to do is come in and breathe life into it. You do realize that's what God does in the Bible.
Okay, but you guys have created the characters. You guys did everything that you had to do to give us that opportunity. So when, I was drained anyway. I thought I was going to have a. So I get home and then I was at a table read for another project, and I get a call from my agent saying, hey, there's a chemistry read. And I had no idea what the hell chemistry read was. I was like, yeah, sure. And this is going to be this girl, Annette Mahendra, she's on the show, yada, yada, yada. I was like, great. So, you know, who is Annette? And I'm like, okay. So then I connected that Annette, Nina, you know, kind of did my research as far as the characters go, came in, Annette was there. And she was just sitting by the door at the office at DreamWorks, and we just hit it off. You know, it was cool. Like, we just hung out and talked for a little bit as when we had time, bonded as people and as Russians and as actors. Walked in, English, Russian. Improv, English, Russian. Right? Like 2 hours at least.
Wow.
Drenched. Came out, I was like, and that's it. You know, I came home during the day. I'm sorry to take so much time, but it was like, it takes me back now. And I'm trying, like, it feels like I'm reliving this experience. You know, I'm sweating just talking about it. Because I came home, I was like, man, like, this is like why can't they just call and say you got the part? Anyway, eventually I got the call and I got the part and, you know.
The rest
and,
is
and here you are.
I'm here.
I'm curious.
It's great for us casting these parts because we watch these tapes and mostly we're watching the Russian, which we don't speak. So we cast the part watching them talking in Russian and seeing how it feels without really knowing a word they're saying.
But it's interesting in a way. It gives you a great perspective on actors, and it's an interesting way to look at material. Sometimes when I'm on a flight, I really enjoy glancing over and watching TV show or the movie that somebody else is watching without sound, and seeing the performances without sound, and seeing what the filmmaker's chosen to convey without sound. And I think there's something really compelling about those scenes in Russian where you don't quite speak the language. There's something liberating about it. You take in more, you're forced to take in more of the posture and facial expression on some level.
The other thing I would say is we remember all those tapes. I mean, we really do. And also when you're on the other side of watching the tapes, you really do know that the actors are going through all that. And it's, in a way, it's hard because you have to go through a lot of them and most people don't get the part, and you try to block out all the emotion that goes in for the actors because it's painful in a way. But then also there's the joy of it when it's working.
It's also like a political campaign is for a candidate, which is if you survive the campaign, then maybe you can survive the office. And I think, look, acting for television or film or on theater, it's a hard job. And you come in and suddenly there's new pages, or, you know, last night we couldn't have the rights to certain song lyrics, so suddenly a whole scene had to be rewritten, and you got to be ready to show up, change it up, improv, Russian English, and do it.
I don't think I knew it was 2 hours that you guys were in there. That's a long
time. Well, maybe it wasn't 2 hours, but, you know, don't let the truth stand on the way of a good story.
Right? It felt like 2 hours.
It felt like a lot more than 2 hours.
And that's what matters.
It was 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Costa, in this episode, we saw Oleg and his father, Igor. You get a sense from their conversation. It's a very intense, very sort of honest conversation, it feels like, from the outside, that they don't quite know or understand or trust each other. Sort of, what's your read on their relationship?
Well, look, I mean, Oleg and his father, they've had a lot of disagreements over the years, and partly, you know, that's the reason why Oleg left Soviet Union and came to the United States and is trying to make his way in politics at the Residentura. They have had very difficult relationships. So now when Oleg is back and, you know, he's more of a man than a boy who left that country and that family, and they're having this conversation. They're having conversation about very serious matters. You know, he's not just there to talk about fun stuff. They're talking about saving somebody who is considered to be a prisoner of state and a traitor. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, the father, played by great Boris Godunov, he says, you know, I cannot really help you because you don't want to be associated with the traitor. Because if you are, guess what? You are one too.
Yeah.
And you know what? That, with everything else aside, if you look at it, this tells the audience so much about the show. Because it's not just who you are, but who you talk to and who you are associated with and what you think and what you say and who you're with and who sees you with who. This is what the show is about. Mm-hmm. One of the things the show is about, you know what I mean? So yes, I mean, I guess it's going to be a more sort of, it will look like a heavier conversation to those who doesn't speak the language. Because it seems like any time Russians are speaking in Russian, it feels like they're either having an argument or, you know, talking about killing somebody. I don't know why. But it was a phenomenal day and working. I think we did it over a couple of episodes, didn't we? And it was great. It was great for the character to go to Russia as well, because we haven't seen him in Russian before. Right. We haven't, you know, one thing is to talk about the country where you come from, and it's completely different to see that person in the country, in the setting, which is his home. See him here surrounded by books in his house with his father and his father's desk, and seeing the pictures from his childhood of him as a boy, and as an audience member, it's phenomenal to be able to see a picture of a kid and kind of look at him now. It's like, okay, well, that became this, and this is how, and this is why.
Yeah. I have a technical acting question for you about that, because of course there's a scene that we shot exterior in Russia. You're walking down the street, and not far behind, for anybody who's familiar with the city, there's a very well-known theater, but of course you're not shooting in any of that. You're actually walking by a very cumbersome, weird green smock that's covering up half of the block.
Right.
That's going to be replaced with all of that.
Right.
Afterwards, as an actor, how do you make that in your brain feel real enough to have a scene that's then seamlessly translated later through digital effects?
I see it. I think you have to. I read somebody said that acting is finding truth in whatever world you're in. So it doesn't matter if you are fighting dinosaurs or you're in the 80s in the Soviet Union playing spies. It's about finding that truth in that material, in that scene, in that surrounding. And you can be surrounded by green screens everywhere and be in this green sphere, you know, at the end of the day, the truth is still there.
the truth is in the material. And if you trust it, like I do, then it's quite easy.
Can you talk about how you know, your character is really developed when he first arrived? He was, at least from by the others, maybe they were projecting their own feelings. He was this spoiled son of an apparatchik. He pulled strings to get this position, maybe. Who knew if he even knew anything about planes and stuff, if he even had this scientific background. But you have developed a very close relationship with Arkady, got to be drinking buddies. Like, how...
Well, hang on. They're hardly drinking buddies.
Well, they drink together.
Drinking is a huge part of any culture. Not just Russian, and I know what you're thinking. No. there's a great saying. It says, if you want to get to know somebody, have a drink with that person. Get drunk with that person. Because your filter disappears. Did you ever notice you have a drink with somebody and then over a period of a few drinks, you kind of like, you talk about things that you kind of never thought you would be talking about. And it's so true. You get to know that person's beliefs. You get to know the person, what the person really thinks and feels. In the story, when Arkady and Oleg, they had a drink for the first time, that kind of marked the transition of their relationship from one stage to another stage. And having a drink with somebody is a milestone. It's almost like, okay, our relationship has just transcended into a different stage. Now we can talk, and now we can whisper. We don't have to talk officially, only we can now whisper about other things too. Mm-hmm. It's now a club. And so, and I believe that, you know, that's part of every culture, you know, whether you're drinking tea or you're drinking vodka, you're drinking coffee. It's a tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, we'll get to this in a moment, but when we were doing our research on KGB in general and Residenturas in particular, that is to say the headquarters of KGB inside the embassy, at one point someone slipped to us the floor plan of the Residentura. Now, it turns out that apparently every Residentura in every embassy has the same floor plan. It has the same spot where the soundproof booth is, where you can talk secretly, in the same conference room, in the same residence office. And at the center of every Residentura, in every KGB, at every embassy, the very center, there's a bar. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that there isn't a bar at the CIA or Mossad. I'm just saying.
So, where's our bar?
It would have seemed too hard to believe.
Definitely, yeah.
That's it for this week. Thanks again to Joel Fields, Joe Weisberg, and Costa Ronan for joining us to talk about episode 404. Spasila.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you, June. That was great.
Come back next week to hear us talk about episode 405 with some more very special guests.
I felt so guilty each time I had to say, I'm sorry, could you cover that breast? Great. Like, it's really uncomfortable.
I'm June Thomas. Thank you for joining us. Our producer is Henry Molofsky. This show is part of the Panoply Network.